Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I am Danny Zilberberg, and today we are going to demystify milk. Cool, white, bright lights shine upon perfect rows of square cartons, plastic jugs, and glass bottles, all containing an indistinguishable white fluid. You're in the dairy aisle of your local supermarket, but ignore the imposters for now, lactose-free or soy milk, and focus on whole milk. There is never a single choice. The case is bursting with brands that make a variety of claims and list a mouthful of scientific jargon. So how do you decode the label and tell which half-gallon is right for you? The fresh fluid milk industry got its start in the mid-1800s as demand for fresh milk ballooned in urban centers across the country. The industry struggled for decades to supply a safe, consistent supply of milk. Despite milk's image as the purest form of nutrition, thousands of children died from tainted sources. Over the years, advances in refrigeration, sanitation, and transportation, along with stronger government regulation, have ensured a safe supply that we now take for granted. Despite being an ideal medium for bacterial growth, pasteurized fluid milk has not been involved in a major foodborne illness outbreak in recent history. Regular pasteurization heats the milk to 161 degrees Fahrenheit for 15 seconds and has a shelf life of 2 to 3 weeks. Ultrapasteurization raises the temperature of milk well above the boiling point of water, and the resulting milk can stay on the shelf almost 5 times longer. In terms of the resulting nutrition profile, there doesn't seem to be any difference, but the taste between the two processes can vary. What a cow eats, however, does matter. Dr. Michael Van Amberg is a professor in the Department of Animal Sciences at Cornell University and focuses on dairy management and nutritional management of growing and lactating dairy cattle. He elaborates.
If there is any difference for pasture-fed cattle or grass-fed, I think was the other term that she had used at one point, that would be that some of the fatty acids in fresh grasses can be modified by the rumen bacteria and then absorbed by the cow, and they end up in the milk, and they're called conjugated linoleic acid. And there's many variants of that. Some of them are anti-fat, some of them are anti-cancer, so they have benefits above and beyond the nutrient content of those fatty acids. They're still in really low levels within the milk. The cow's just not able, we're not able to figure out how to get the cow to enhance that, obviously. Those things sound like fun. If we could make them if we could get a cow to produce more of these anti-cancer things or anti-fat, then that might be healthier for us, but we haven't figured out how to do that because they actually reduce the amount of fat that a cow excretes.
Dr. Van Amberg cautions that the effect of CLA should not be overstated and that seeing grass-fed, an unregulated term, on a milk label is no guarantee that the cows see a significant amount of pasture. There's also another marketing term that you may sometimes see on milk cartons, RBST-free. Mark Castle is a co-director at the Cornucopia Institute. The Institute has done research on the use of RBST in the milk industry and has expressed their concerns. Mr. Castle elaborates.
You hear RBGH or RBST, what that really is genetically engineered bovine growth hormone. Monsanto, when they developed this project, didn't like consumers being concerned about the H word. So they changed that nomenclature. Instead of BGH, they started using BST or bovine somatotropin, which is the technical term for the hormone. A cow's pituitary glands naturally excrete this product, but they found out that creating an artificial hormone and injecting the cow periodically radically boosted its milk production. We find this artificial hormone that's never existed on Earth before in the milk itself. It was the first commercialized genetically engineered product on the market. Why Monsanto chose milk, which is predominantly purchased by mothers and fed to children, is beyond me.
While you will see milk cartons labeled RBST-free, Mr. Castle says that there is no independent oversight that guarantees it. He and the Cornucopia Institute believe that organic milk is the answer to all consumer concerns.
Organic milk is as natural as we can get. It's produced by cows that, just like God intended, graze on grass. They eat organic hay and organic pasture during the summer months, spring and fall. And if they get some grain, it's all produced organically, which means everything they eat was produced without chemical fertilizers, synthetic fertilizers. And on big conventional farms where you push for high productivity, cows get sick a lot, and they get a lot of drugs. And the most common class of drugs would be antibiotics.
There is great concern among consumer and public health advocates like Mark Castle over the use of antibiotics in raising cattle. But on the other hand, Dr. Van Amburgh shows no such concern. He stresses that the milk system is antibiotic-free.
The only time we give a cow antibiotics is when she has an occasional mastitis outbreak. Many cows never get that through a lactation. Some cows will get it, and we've got to treat them and move on. That cow is withheld from the milk stream until she's tested. So it's actually the most regulated, sampled, and analyzed thing that we do in the food system, and that is to ensure that there are no antibiotics in the milk stream whatsoever.
Mr. Castle couldn't disagree more.
One of the problems is that more and more drugs are being used, quote, off-label. They weren't necessarily labeled for dairy cattle. They're not being checked for at the dairy plant. We're finding residues of these off-label drugs in beef. So they're out there in the marketplace. I think the greatest protection that consumers have, again, is to look for that organic label, because it's from cows that are cared for in a different way that aren't going to require antibiotics.
Unlike Mr. Castle, Dr. Van Amburgh disagrees with the need for organic milk altogether.
For people who believe that it's better for them, but there's no scientific evidence that organic milk is actually any different, and there's been several papers and studies here recently that have pretty much verified that. There's a pediatrics paper that came out a year or so ago, and a bunch of other papers that have come out, that they really find no clear-cut evidence that milk from cows fed organically is any different than conventional milk in terms of anything in the milk, bacterial profiles, nutrient density, anything like that. So my own opinion is save yourself some money and just buy milk.
Even after a century and a half of progress, there is still no consensus on what makes the healthiest glass of milk. The dairy industry has come a long way by providing us with an affordable, plentiful, and disease-free supply of milk. But advocates for organic dairy believe this progress has come at a price. Organic milk does provide an extra layer of scrutiny, but it can cost 2 to 3 times as much as conventional milk. So which carton of milk should you pick up at the supermarket? Well, it depends. We've only touched upon the surface of the fresh milk industry, but you can now decode most of your milk's label. It's your wallet and your values. So what matters most to you? I'm Danny Zilberberg for HeritageRadioNetwork.org.